let's welcome in the writer for the Mercury News. He's on the FGF Giants beat writer. He also does a great podcast on KMBR. Kerry Crowley, how are you this morning, Kerry?
Excellent, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing good, my friend. I haven't had a chance to really talk to you in a while, so I got some questions about some of your past, and I want to jump right on. And you were a writer for the Cape Cod League, and I played out in Cape Cod. Tell me your experiences out there.
Oh, did you really? I'd love to hear your experiences. I was actually I was the play-by-play voice of the Bourne Braves. So I spent two summers out in Cape Cod, and Bill, it was so funny because our biggest power hitter out there was Pete Alonso, the first baseman for the New York Mets. Everyone loved watching him take batting practice, but Pete Alonso didn't hit a home run when I called his game. He actually went 0 for the season, and so we never could have seen this coming. 50 as a rookie, and it really goes to show how much development takes place in the minor leagues, and you never truly know who the breakout stars are going to be, which is why you can find, you know, gems anywhere in the
Yeah, I tell you what, Kerry, I played for the Orleans Cardinals, and back in the day, Steve Bye-Bye Balboni was the big name in there, and Alan Wiggins, the great Alan Wiggins, who played with the Padres, and I don't know if you remember, we used to always go to Fenway Park for the All-Star game, and that was the big thrill of Cape Cod, but what a great league for college players, and I'm just disappointed that they couldn't pull it off this year.
Oh, yeah, no kidding, and the Fenway Park experience, the introduction that that league gives you, really, you know, Orleans Firebirds or the Cardinals back when you played for them, I knew that well because they had one of the best platoons in the history of the Cape Cod League. I think they had Frank Thomas, Mark Teixeira one year, the righty and the lefty at first base, and JT Snow may have been on that team and forced to go to the outfield. There was some ridiculous setup where they just had so many talents at first base, but they made it all work, and Orleans is one of the great franchises there.
Yeah, and you look at all the top teams, and that's where all the scouts go. Of course, Alaska was the other big college summer league team where everybody took off to, and back in the day, they had Illinois. They had a little summer ball team, but it was either Cape Cod or Alaska, and that was the big point of any college player to go there to have all these scouts to come watch you because they didn't have really a central scouting department back then, and you know, you had annual scouts, guys going in, little birds seeing this guy, seeing that guy. And you had very seldom a big-name scout to come watch you. But going to the Cape Cod League, boy, eyes are on you every day. And I'm sure you saw the same thing with the scouting departments there.
Oh, absolutely, Bill. And, you know, there was a great story written 2 years ago about Brian Sabian. After he kind of turned things over to Bobby Evans, the Giants front office, Sabian said, "The one thing that I wanted to do my whole career as general manager was go out to Cape Cod and get a look at it for myself." And he did that in 2017, I believe, was the year where Sabian spent a week or two out on Cape Cod. And I think the story was actually set in Orleans down there at the field there. And so, you know, with Orleans, Chatham, Yarmouth, Dennis so close together, so fun. And people forget that's where all the Giants talent, the homegrown talent in the early 2010s played, you know. You look at Buster Posey, Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt, Tim Lincecum. They're all Cape League alums, so it really is the stars of tomorrow playing there today.
Yeah, and I tell you, next summer, hopefully it'll start up again, Kerry, and if fans ever want to watch some really good college baseball, a lot of guys that don't sign to go to the big leagues go out to Cape Cod, and baseball's every night. The settings are so beautiful, and Gary St. Jean, we're talking to him in a green room one day, and he goes, "I watched you back there. I have a house in Orleans," and I was like, wow, you know, because you know as well as I do, the fan favorites, I mean, they're parked on hills, and it's just great baseball. The weather is outstanding out there, and of course Massachusetts in summertime is beautiful. But let's get into yesterday's game a little bit. And Tyler Anderson struggled right off the bat. What did you see from him yesterday compared to last week when he threw nine complete?
You know, Bill, it wasn't as much of a difference in Anderson to me as it was a difference in the way the D-backs approached him. When you look at that complete game that he threw at Oracle Park, the D-backs were chasing first and second pitches every at-bat on the corners of the strike zone. And so Anderson was really able to use the fastball-changeup combination, induce weak contact. He only had four strikeouts, so that says that the D-backs were just off balance all night. And last night, the D-backs had a really patient approach. They made Anderson come in the strike zone. He admitted the strike quality wasn't as good. The pitches weren't as pinpoint as he wanted them. And so, you know, it really shows, you know, even in a span of 6 days, how major league pitchers have such thin margins for error. And when they're on, it's a really special night like what Anderson had last weekend. And when they're only slightly off, you see how great major league hitters are.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I talked on the opening last week. He had 21 first pitch strikes out of 32 hitters. Yesterday, he had zero. I say zero first pitch strikes. And you talked about it just right then and there. They made adjustments. They didn't reach out. They didn't go out of the strike zone. They waited for him to throw strikes. And, of course, giving up nine hits, they waited on him very well. And he got the ball up. And I think that was one of his big mistakes.
Yeah, no doubt it was one of his big mistakes. And you look at that D-back lineup, Ketel Marte, Christian Walker, David Peralta, those are all guys who are going to punish pitches that are up in the strike zone. So you felt like maybe a complete game round two wasn't necessarily possible. It was probably the Giants hoping for a quality start. But the soft contact really hurt Anderson, and that's where I give the D-backs credit. They put the ball in play. They made the Giants' defense work at the big, expansive outfield of Chase Field, and it was almost playing like Coors Field last night, Bill, where everything that was put in play was just so difficult for defenders to get to.
And you know what, Kerry, we talk about the offense, of course, the doubleheader being shut out, and then yesterday they get Zach Gallen. I mean, they've had some starting pitching. Of course, the Dodgers threw their whole bullpen at them, but three straight games, they've had some live arms coming at them, and I thought that was one of the biggest things. They didn't make the adjustments on some of the things that Zach threw out there yesterday until they got to Windener, and then they finally got something going on in the ninth inning until Longo hit the home run. I just thought the offense the last three games wasn't that aggressive, but yet they've had some good pitching against them.
Yeah, I think you would agree with me, Bill, that Zach Gallen's going to be a star in this league. Yeah. You look at four pitches, he can throw them all for strikes, he pounds the corners of the zone. This guy's really good, and he's going to be tough to deal with for the Giants for the years to come. And then Clayton Kershaw, we all know how he's pitched against the Giants for years, and so it really wasn't that surprising that the Giants finally did break out against that D-backs bullpen in the ninth inning, because the Giants have kind of feasted on weaker pitching this year. We know that this can be an above-average offense, so I'm eager to see how they look the next few days, particularly because they won't be facing the same caliber of pitcher. So can they dig themselves out of this hole that they've now gotten into with three straight losses, maybe win a few before the trade deadline? That's key.
I think it's really key, and I think today's going to be a big one. We talked about Anderson. Now Trevor Cahill goes in there with the same scenario about what are they going to make adjustments on him, because he threw the ball very well, only giving up one hit. And with the same way, when you look at Luke Weaver, Luke Weaver pitched very well for four innings until they spotted on him. So, again, the same kind of parallels of last night we're going to see today. What do you think could happen today?
I think the Giants are better equipped to hit Luke Weaver. I thought that they showed that the second or third time through the order in Weaver's last outing. He was so good the first time through, but I do think that this is an offense that should put up four, five, six runs big against the D-backs. Whether all come against Weaver or they break into that weaker D-backs bullpen, I do think that we're going to see the Giants break out just because, you know, Bill, the offense has been a strength for this team, and to see them get shut down three games in a row, totally uncharacteristic. So I do think they're due, and I think that some of that being due is a product of the pitchers that they've faced.
We're speaking to Kerry Crowley on the pregame show, and there's a couple of things I want to see and hear what your opinions are. First of all, Chris Shaw and Fernando Abad going to Sacramento. Do you think those names are possibly in a trade deadline kind of trade, maybe an add-on?
You know, Bill, the timing just stands out as their change of scenery candidates. I don't think that they are the prospects they once were in the Giants organization, particularly Shaw. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got to be really tough for a 2015 draft pick who was once viewed as a first baseman of the future to see all those young kids, the Barts, the Ramos, the Lucianos, the Bishops, go down to Sacramento and play together, because he wasn't included in that group. And this is someone who hasn't been given an extended chance at the major league level. And so the Giants would probably be best served to include him in a trade and give him an opportunity somewhere, or see him at the major league level, find a spot for him, because he's proven he can conquer Triple-A pitching. I think he's got 63 career home runs for the River Cats, so you just hope that he eventually gets that 100 or 200 at bats that he's probably earned through the years in Sacramento.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, I've followed the River Cats last couple of years, and putting him from first base to left field, giving him an opportunity to try to find another position. And I thought he did it very well. That's a hard change when you played first base pretty much your whole career, and now you're in left field, especially in Sacramento. The ball flies out of there at nights. But I think you're hitting it right on the head of the nail with both these guys that could possibly be added into a possible trade. Let's talk about the taxi squad. The taxi taxi squad got my attention when you're bringing up Rico Garcia, Carlos Navas, Daniel Robertson, who they just picked up, and Chris Herrmann. Guys that could possibly fit in, you think, if there's a trade to be made?
Well, you know, Bill, the name Carlos Navas struck out right away because he's someone who's been training as a starting pitcher down in Sacramento. And so what that says to me is the Giants are considering parting with a starting pitcher. You look, Kevin Gausman's turn in the rotation comes up Tuesday in Colorado, and Gausman seems like the most likely trade candidate on this roster. So if the Giants wanted, they could trade out Gausman, slot Navas into the rotation, wait for Drew Smyly to come back and act as if nothing happened, and really hope that they get the return that you might be able to see from a guy like Gausman, who is this year's Drew Pomeranz, in my opinion, but better because he's more reliable. He can swing from the rotation to the bullpen. I think I'd love to see Kevin Gausman's stuff in October. I mean, the fastball can go up to 99. The splitter is so good. Maybe he's not a starter in October, but maybe he's a 2-3 inning guy that can bridge a gap for teams and really make an impact in October.
Boy, Kerry, you really talked about Gausman there because I really didn't watch him much up until this year. And his fastball is so live. And to go into the sixth and seventh inning going 97, 98, and then throwing that split like you're talking, I mean, you could put him anywhere in a starting rotation. You could put him as a closer, even though he hasn't closed. Yep. You can build your bullpen around him. But I just think he's one guy that there's probably a lot of targets wanting him, and to see what they want in return is going to tell us what Gausman is, especially the last start. And I think you wrote about it when he said, hey, I like the Giants organization. I would like to pitch here again. Even if I get traded, I may even look at here coming as a free agent. So I just think the positives with Gausman are just checking every box that the Giants would want further down the road.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And the thing about Gausman is, you know, the ERA isn't what you would like it to be, but we're still at the point in the season where this is a small sample size. I know there's only 26 games left, but, you know, if we were in a 162-game season, we'd say, oh, there's plenty of time for Gausman to get that ERA down. He's throwing the ball well. And so, you know, you're weighing whether you want to extend him at the end of the season, if he would be open to that, if he truly is, loving what the Giants coaching staff has done with his arm. Or, you know, you could potentially add an impact arm who's young, controllable, and could be a piece of your rotation for years to come if you do trade him at this year's deadline. And so I think that they'll listen to offers. And the one thing working in Farhan Zaidi's favor right now, Bill, is that there are so many teams looking for starting pitching. The Braves, the White Sox, the Padres, the A's. You can really build a market around Kevin Gausman the way that you probably couldn't build a market around some of the other players that the Giants might like to part with.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And everybody's looking for relief pitchers, too, which really I go into Watson as being another name that's a possible trade line for the Giants. And I think he's pretty much marked by it. So many teams from Philadelphia to the Cubs, Tampa Bay. They're all looking for a left-handed bullpen arm. And that's probably one of the guys I circled on my radar today that could possibly be leaving the Giants, too.
Well, he's the one guy the Giants have seemingly protected at every turn this season, Bill, and that tells me they've thought of him as a trade candidate all along because he's not someone who's pitched on back-to-back days frequently. He's not someone who's gone 3 out of 4. He has fewer appearances, fewer innings than other teams. The ERA is sparkling. I mean, this is a guy with postseason experience. He's got the long track record of success, and the Giants have managed him to the point that you expect him to be traded based on how they've handled him compared to the rest of the bullpen at this point in the year.
They sure do. Kerry Crowley, thank you again for joining me today on Marty Leary's Talking Baseball Show. It's always great to listen to you and hear and write and listen and everything that you do. I love the hustle that you do in the game of baseball and the writing that you do for the Merc. I read it every day as much as I can when we're following you. And again, thank you so much for your time today, and let's see what happens in the next 3 days on this trade deadline.
Well, thanks, Bill. It's fun for me. I always listen to the post-game show on the way home. You've been doing a great job this season. It's nice to catch up on the pregame show.
Excellent. Thanks, Kerry. Have a good day. That was Kerry Crowley on the pregame show, Talking Baseball. And we're going to be right back here on KNBR, the sports leader.